welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is Richard Cook, and the topic, we need to come back to this on a regular basis. The topic is the global economic crisis, and just popping into my mind back when I was a lot younger, the old Ernie Ford song, 16 Tons, I think it was called, but the line was, that I remember, was another day older and deeper in debt. Well, indeed, another day passes and the debt continues to mount and the problems continue to be greater. And that's what we'll talk about in the program. Let me just tell you about Richard. Richard is an author. He's a consultant. He's a publisher, and his interests are pretty widespread in public policy, economic and monetary reform, and a lot more. He's also a former U.S. government analyst. And in 1986, he was the whistleblower who exposed the cover-up of the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster last year. I'm sure most listeners, or I imagine a good many listeners, remember that. I certainly remember it over 20 years ago now. Richard is a regular contributor to Global Research, and one of his recent articles he calls, it's a good title, Richard, Bailout for the People, the Cook Plan. Can I just mention a couple of things before we get started?
Yeah, certainly, Steve.
Oh, it seems like another day, another bit of information on the latest schemes coming out of Washington. There's an AP report I spotted this morning that the so-called the TALF program of last year, the so-called Term Asset-Backed Securities Loan Facility, the Fed, as AP says it, the Fed is rolling it out apparently today, a couple of $100 billion or $1 trillion, supposedly to help households and business. Well, it won't do much for households. It may do a lot for business, but it won't do much for households. And let me call readers' attention to an important article that Michelle Chosudovsky wrote, and it's top featured on globalresearch.ca today. And he calls it America's Fiscal Collapse. Oh, there's so much in it, but let me just mention a couple of things. He calls what's going on, quote, the most drastic curtailment in public spending in American history. What really is going on, he refers to a war budget. You can really call it a war and Wall Street budget. And the austerity program will hit all major federal spending programs except the Wall Street bailout, of course, the Pentagon, the wars, the Middle East war, whatever others they have in mind, and to service the staggering U.S. public debt that just is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Another day older and deeper in debt. Richard, welcome to the program. I'm delighted to have you on. You're a regular contributor to Global Research.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, it's terrific. We certainly have a lot to talk about, and you have your bailout for the people plan. We can get into that. If you've heard the program, you know very shortly our first commercial break is coming, and when we hear that soft music, I'll interrupt it. But kick it off, and I'll stop when the break first break comes.
Well, the
talk about your bailout for the people.
Yeah, the point I'm consistently trying to make in everything that I'm writing is that the monetary system that we have is based on debt. Every dollar comes into circulation through a loan from a bank. And so with the financial meltdown, we got into this situation because of the pyramiding debt that's taken down the world financial system, but the only way they can think to get out of it is more debt.
Oh,
and
indeed.
That's what I'm trying to expose.
Can I stop you there a moment because they're going to break away for a commercial, Richard? We'll pick it up as soon as we come back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Richard Cook. We're talking about his article, and I love the title, Richard, Bailout for the People, the Cook Plan. It's a very long article. You've got an awful lot in it, and it's easily found on Global Research or simply by Googling it. And I encourage listeners to get hold of it and read it. But, Richard, you continue where you left off.
Well, the problem that we have, the massive problem, is that we have a world monetary system that is based almost exclusively on debt, on lending by banks at interest, so that every dollar in circulation ultimately goes back to a debt to a bank that the bank then collects interest on, and it just goes around and around and builds into this vast pyramid of debt that is crushing the world economic system. That's the underlying problem. Let me just go very briefly into what the Cook Plan consists of, and then we can kind of go back from there, because I think the solution to it kind of exposes the problem. What I'm advocating is a cash payment to individuals, and we're talking here, first of all, about the United States, the U.S. economy, in the amount of $1,000 a month that would be paid by the Treasury to any person in the United States who applied for it. Of course, there would be a smaller allowance for children. But any adult citizen who applied for the dividend, which is what I call it, would receive that amount of money, $1,000 a month, as a basic income guarantee. If the government is able to overnight distribute billions and trillions of dollars to the banking system, if the banking system is able to create trillions of dollars annually out of thin air through their fractional reserve privileges and lend that at interest, then the government is certainly able to distribute to individual citizens a dividend in the amount that I'm talking about. Then what I am also advocating is to take the money that would be distributed through this dividend to citizens, use that to capitalize an entirely new series of community savings banks that would lend at very low rates of interest to individuals, students, households, local businesses, small businesses, and very importantly, family farms, because we've lost our family farming economy. These two measures alone would create an entirely new economic paradigm by introducing spending power at the grassroots level. The grassroots economy is starved today of purchasing power, of consumer spending power, and all they can think of are more top-down programs, federal debt, federal job creation programs, restarting bank lending. All of this is just more of the same, more debt-based money coming into circulation that ultimately has to go back to the banks with interest. We need to get rid of that system. That system has been around for a long time. It's gotten much worse in the United States over the last generation when we've outsourced so much of our manufacturing economy. We've gone to this low-wage, low-salary service economy that now is dying because we've lost our ability to produce at the level of ordinary working men and women. That needs to be replaced, but in order to do that, we need a new monetary system that is not based on debt, that's based on the concept of dividend payments to the citizens. It's very similar to the Alaska Permanent Fund, where every year now they're paying over $3,000 in a dividend from the Alaska Permanent Fund to individuals. I just learned a few days ago that similar legislation has been introduced in Vermont for the payment of an annual citizens' dividend. This is what we must do now. In order to recover this economy that is crushed by the debt burden.
And, of course, Alaska did it way back when they discovered oil at Prudhoe Bay.
Right,
and they, Alaska, small state, a small population. It's certainly easier for Alaska than for a big country, Richard, but the idea is very sound. And Alaska cut their taxes greatly for people, and instead of having individuals pay taxes to the state, the state paid a dividend back to the people.
Right. This could be done by any state that wanted to do it, but it could also be done on a national level. Now, there's another provision of monetary reform that I think is just as important. The American Monetary Institute, which runs out of Chicago, has developed what they call the American Monetary Act. I contributed to that. The director of AMI is Steve Zarlinga, who's a friend of mine and has been promoting this with Congress. And what this does is it returns to a system of direct government spending, which is similar to what was done with the greenbacks going back into the 19th century, where Congress during the Civil War, when the government went to the bankers in New York to get loans to finance the war, and they wanted interest rates in the order of 20% to 30%, which was completely outrageous. So what Congress did instead was it passed legislation authorizing the government to spend directly into circulation without borrowing and without taxation $450 million, which was used to finance the Civil War. Now, what most people don't understand is that the greenback stayed in circulation throughout the rest of the 19th century. We need to return to a greenback system. We had a greenback party in the United States after the Civil War that actually placed congressmen into office in the U.S. Congress and also ran candidates for president. That whole movement was destroyed by the banking powers that kind of took over the economy of the United States through the National Banking Acts and then in 1913 through the Federal Reserve System. We are completely brainwashed today to believe that the only way money can enter into circulation is by bank lending. But that's just a cumulative result of over a century of bankers' propaganda. The government learned very well during the late 19th century that money directly spent into circulation that is then returnable to the government through taxation is a way to create a sound currency without bank involvement and without debt. We should return to a system like that. This is the primary provision of the American Monetary Act that the American Monetary Institute is promoting.
Richard,
I advocate that.
Listeners to this program know well that the Federal Reserve is a private banking cartel, and it's been brought up. We've never had a program specifically on it, but it's been brought up that, of course, the Federal Reserve's existence beginning at the end of 1913, and I've quoted Woodrow Wilson way back in an article I wrote, where here this intelligent man, not just a U.S. president, but former a lawyer, law professor, president of Princeton University, he signed this bloody act, and later he said, quote, "I ruined my country," but they got it through the way they always do, Richard, when it's something controversial, something the bankers wanted for many decades, and they finally got it. They got it through, I think, 2 days before Christmas, when half the Congress was either out of town or about to leave. Nobody read the bloody act, and they signed this absolute worst piece of legislation ever and gave the bankers what they wanted, the power to control the money supply, the Rothschild's dream. You know, give me the power of the money, and I don't care what you do, because I've got you where I want you. And Lincoln got that greenback law through back during the Civil War, and then as soon as he was assassinated, they revoked the law, went back to the old system.
Well, we've had this struggle in our country going back to the very beginnings between what the politicians called in the early days the money power and the democratic interests that wanted to give the people, through their representative government, control of the currency. And it's been this tension that really started before the American Revolution, because the colonial legislatures did just what Lincoln did. They printed and spent into circulation for public purposes their own currency, their own paper currency. And the person who developed the theory of this was Benjamin Franklin. Now, up until 1764, the American colonies were probably the most prosperous trading area of comparable size on Earth. And when Franklin was asked, when he went to London, why the colonies were so prosperous, he said it was the colonial paper money. Well, in 1764, the bankers who were in charge of the Bank of England and who were very powerful in the British Parliament got the British Parliament to pass what they called the Currency Act of 1764, which prohibited the use of colonial paper money. That's what began the economic depression that ultimately led to the revolution, and Benjamin Franklin said that. He said that the primary cause of the American Revolution was the Parliament's prohibition on colonial currency. That struggle between the banking power and the power of the democratic government and its monetary system has been the main political divide in the United States ever since then. But with the Federal Reserve, Steve, as you point out, this was the ultimate banker's victory. And it wasn't just the American bankers who won when the Federal Reserve Act was passed in 1913. They did it in league with the European bankers, with the Warburg and the Rothschild interests, who actually came over from Europe to help write that legislation. And we have been stuck with a bank-centered currency ever since, and that is what has ultimately produced this catastrophe.
And it's killing us, Richard. We need to take another break, so let's do it, and we'll continue this very, very disturbing story.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Richard Cook. We're talking about the global economic crisis. Richard, let me throw one thing in. I've only looked at this article. I haven't read it yet. But Ellen Brown has what looks like a very, very interesting article on global research today. She calls it, and she'll be on the program. Oh, she'll be on the program next week. So we'll talk about this and everything else. She also writes absolutely must-read articles. Her new one is called Playing the Banking Game, How Cash-Starved States Can Create Their Own Credit, Break Away from the Stranglehold of the Fed and Create Their Own Credit. And I will read this probably later today. And apparently one state in the country has already done it, created their own banking system with their own banks, creating their own money and getting out from under this terrible system that we have. And apparently it's all legal. But again, we have a huge debt problem, as we both know, Richard, and it's very disturbing to think that the solution coming out of Washington is to add mountains more debt onto this simply unmanageable burden we have right now, thinking that that will solve the problem. It won't solve it. It'll just make it worse. But you pick it up where you left off.
Yes, Ellen has written some really good articles about other ways to conduct banking and to structure the lending of money. And this idea of state banking is, that she's written about is really very interesting, very intriguing. In fact, before the Civil War, I did some research on the banking system that we had back then. There were state-owned banks before the Civil War that worked very well. And allowed the states to essentially run their own monetary system. Now, that was largely replaced by the national banking system and the money trust that came after the Civil War. But now here we have the state of North Dakota apparently still in business doing this. So, yes, it's a very intriguing possibility, and I think it's well worth looking at.
Oh, she asked, what does the state of North Dakota have that other states don't? The answer seems to be the only state-owned bank in the nation.
Yes, that's right, and that's something we really need to study.
Oh, indeed we do. And if it works for them, why not for the other 49?
Yeah, I agree. Now, the one thing that I do advocate in addition to that, or as another alternative, and Ellen and I have talked about this, I've coined the phrase credit as a public utility, and Ellen uses that also in her writing. The idea of low interest public banking is the same as I have in the Cook Plan, where we have the local community banks, the new series of local community banks that would do just that. And if you add to that a dividend for the people, similar to the Alaska Permanent Fund, then I think that and the idea of direct greenback-type spending by the federal government, with those different elements coming into play, because you need different sources of money, you have a completely new monetary system. You have a democratic monetary system to replace the privately operated monetary system that is based on pyramids of debt that we have now. So, yeah, all of these elements are the makings of a brand new system. Of course, the issue then is political, because the political system of this country is controlled by the financial interests. Monetary reformers understand the solutions to the problem. And if you look at history and you look at the examples that we can point to of successful systems, the pieces are there. We know how to do it. But the real issue then becomes the political issue and the stranglehold that the financial interests hold over the political process. And even with a new president this year and the Democratic Party now controlling both houses of Congress, financial interests still control the political process, and you can see that by the way the government, even under the Obama administration, has chosen to try to bail out the banks as their first priority and pour trillions of dollars into the banking system when people are already crushed by debt and cannot repay their debt. So all of this points to the political crisis that we're in. And until the political crisis is solved and somebody has the courage and the ability to face down the financial interests and to tell them we are taking back the monetary system on behalf of the people, nothing will really change. So
Richard,
that's where the effort has to go.
None of this surprised me a bit. I followed Obama during the campaign. I wrote about him. I quoted him in his own words from his speeches on the stump or whatever. I looked closely at his voting record. I wrote about it. I looked at his funders so heavily from Wall Street and lobbying interests that represent financial interest. It was very clear that this was a guy who would represent the institutions about the way that George Bush did. And my favorite word for describing him before the election and after the election was to use the word continuity. A second favorite was simply to call him George Bush's third term. We haven't missed a beat. What went on continues on day one once he took over. And the same policies, the same big interests. There's no question that the financial interests in the country are the most powerful. And Obama very much is their guy. He's a front guy. He's a front guy for a Wall Street government partnership. And it's for them and against us, and it's killing us.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Richard Cook, the economy is the topic. Richard, my solution for the big Wall Street banks, of course, again, we're up against their immense power. Look at where they brought us, and I think their equity valuations assessed how unsuccessful they have been at this point. With as of yesterday, I don't know what's happening today, but as of yesterday, Citigroup may be a poster child for what's going on. Stock price traded down to $1.20 a share, $1.20 a share. I call them itty-bitty bank now. But they and Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, the big ones, they just stopped long ago operating as banks and just operate as casinos, as hedge funds. So a bank like J.P. Morgan Chase, I saw something that they were leveraged up to maybe $80-odd trillion. And until things went very so last year, they made a profit. But I imagine that things have turned considerably now. But with that kind of leverage, literally a casino. And what kind of an operation is this? We need to get rid of these, in my estimation, and go back to local banking, whether it's state banks, whether it's community banks in cities where we live. For me, Chicago, a big community. You're in a smaller area than I am, Richard. But go back to local banking and have banks operate as banks, not doing what they're doing now. The big boys, the small local ones operate as banks, and I'm sure there are many healthy ones in the country. But the big ones have driven us to the state that we're in right now.
Well, that's absolutely true. Citibank, from the 11th of February to the 20th of February, lost 42% of its stock value. So they are collapsing. If I could mention, Steve, I have a new article that came out yesterday. It's on Global Research today. It's also on my website. My website is www.richardccook.com. And the title of the article is The Last Picture Show.
Oh, I saw it, Richard.
What that means. Let me read an excerpt, if I could, Steve.
Oh, please do. You refer to the 1970s movie.
Yeah. And that's what I'm calling the Obama 2010 budget, The Last Picture Show. I write in the article, until the last year, the biggest growth industry within the U.S. has been the financial sector, producing profits of over $500 billion as late as 2006. In other words, the U.S. has replaced working for a living with the manipulation of money and the extraction of interest, either by lending it or by brokering the lending and investment by foreigners. In order to enrich themselves, the financiers, with a lot of help from the government, created the merger buyout bubble of the 1980s, the dot-com bubble of the 1990s, and the housing equity hedge fund derivative bubble of the 2000s. All of these bubbles now have collapsed. So what the federal government is doing, the Obama administration, through the budget that just came out last week, is to create a new bubble. This is the federal government bubble, and that is what the Obama budget is, because we have, for 2009, the fiscal year that we are in now, a projected budget deficit of $1.75 trillion. That's the deficit. That's not federal spending. The amount is simply staggering. And what they are trying to do is start the thing over again at both ends, one at the top by the continued bailout of the banks, and the other is within the producing economy with the so-called stimulus package of almost $800 billion. And I read today that there are now projections that they're going to be adding up to 250,000 new jobs to the federal government, which is the next bubble. And what I'm saying is that it's the final bubble, because this bubble, along with all the rest, is built upon debt. And the source of the debt they are projecting is going to continue to be the government of China. This is why Hillary Clinton went to China 2 weeks ago to cement relations. But I was at a conference last weekend of the Eastern Economic Association, and speaking at that conference was a man named Henry Liu. You may know Henry.
Oh, I know the name.
Head of Asia Times, the publisher of Asia Times, a brilliant writer, brilliant analyst. He's from China himself originally, and he pointed out quite clearly in this conference that there is absolutely no way that China has the economic ability to continue to float the United States debt. It's just a physical impossibility, because their economy really is not that big. And when you compare it to the continuing requirement by the federal government for more debt-based dollars to feed into the U.S. bubble, it cannot be sustained. It just will not work, and that's why I'm calling this budget The Last Picture Show.
And China has immense problems at home. losing millions of jobs because their manufacturing is declining, Western markets going down like ours, not buying the products in the amounts that were bought before, and it's hitting China very hard, causing an awful lot of unrest, things that don't make the news. But apparently there have been many, many disturbances around the country about workers who have lost their jobs, and there's no safety net in China. There was once, many years ago, but there's no safety net. These people are on their own. So a country the size of China, if you have millions and growing millions of angry people, China needs to use all of their resources just to contain their own headaches, let alone try to fix ours, even though our market is so vitally important to them.
Well, what Henry Liu was saying was, and he's been advocating this in Asia Times, a completely new economic paradigm for the world, because the way the debt-based monetary system has worked, and it's, of course, controls the International Monetary Fund and other big international banking agencies, which try to turn the economies of all the nations of the world, particularly the developing nations, in the direction of international trade, to the neglect of their own infrastructure, their own ability to raise food for their population, to produce a manufacturing sector within their own country. And this isn't going to work anymore. So what Henry Liu is advocating is for China, along with other nations of the world, to turn inwardly, to rebuild their own infrastructure, to use their own productive capability to capitalize their monetary system, and to forget this fantasy that the way to produce prosperity in the world is through this massive free trade global capitalization operation that has collapsed. And if China does that, and they're going to have to do that because they've got to take care of their own population, they will no longer be there to continue to try to bail the United States out by buying our treasury bills. In fact, the treasury market now is paying negative returns on treasury debt. People are pulling out of the treasury market because with inflation and the low rate of return on treasury bonds and bills, it's a losing proposition. You cannot invest in treasuries anymore and come out ahead. So the treasury market, which is now the biggest current bubble, is also in an unsustainable position, and that's what the Obama budget is resting on. It's resting on this massive fire sale of Treasury securities. And so the whole thing, Steve, is just poised to go down, and it's just inconceivable that this budget is going to work. I think we're probably 6 to 8 months away from that collapsing as well. And then there's really nothing left at that point except complete restructuring of the world monetary system and writing off of debt. Another thing that was said by Henry Liu at this conference was world equity, you know, the total nominal value of all of the assets in the world 2 years ago was $60 trillion. Today it's $30 trillion. Our stock market has gone down now by over 50%. It's below 6,700. It was 14,100 in October of 2007. That's happened everywhere in the world. So the ability of the world economy to pay back the debt that everybody's gone into because of these bubbles has been cut in half in less than 2 years. It's disastrous.
Of course, with some days after Henry Liu gave his talk, so I think that $30 trillion is now below $30 trillion. This year so far, again, I don't know what's happening today, but it doesn't matter. There could be a bounce. There could be a short-term rally. We are in a secular bear market, and this thing almost for certain is going to go a lot lower. And even so far through yesterday, we've sustained the biggest one-year decline in equity values since the Great Depression. I think around 55%, something like that. Never had a year that bad. And before it's done, my goodness, Japan's stock market peaked the last trading day of 1989 at just under 39,000. Well, yesterday, the main index, the Nikkei, closed at something like around 7,000. So from 39,000 down to 7,000, that's over 80%. What is 80, 85%, whatever it is. Who knows how low ours will go. But, Richard, you know, in 1929 to mid-1932, we lost, the Dow back then lost 89% of its value. 89% of its value. Well, if we only lose 70 or 80% this time, we will wipe out the pensions, the 401ks, literally the savings, the futures, from millions and millions of people in this country. And all of this never should have happened. It's because of the fraud on Wall Street and the partnership with the U.S. government to let them get away with all this. They set it up. They repealed Glass-Steagall. They basically gave the Wall Street bankers a license to steal, and boy, have they ever done it. And it's continuing with these trillions of dollars. The numbers are so big, Richard, it's hard to keep up with them.
Well,
but I've seen numbers, $9.5 trillion,
yeah.
either handed out or pledged to these people. AIG got $30 billion more yesterday. AIG alone is a black hole. I mean, they could pour another 30 or 130 into them. Now, I don't think it'll make a damn bit of difference.
Yeah, and it's all borrowed money. Again, that's the last picture show. But here's the interesting thing to me that we've got to remember through all of this. The ability of the world economy to produce goods and services has not declined at all. The ability of the world economy to function is still there. People can still work. Minerals can still be mined. Oil can still be pumped. So what are we really looking at? What we are looking at is not the collapse of the world producing economy. We're looking at the collapse of the world financial economy. We're looking at the bubble economy that has developed worldwide through global finance and global capitalism, with the United States and Wall Street being the wheelhouse for this Titanic that's now going down. And it's that value, it's the false value, the bubble value, the nominal value that has disappeared, all because of a system based upon speculation and debt. It all goes back to a monetary system where, as we began this broadcast by saying, where the only way that money is brought into existence is by a bank lending it and charging interest. So in a way, what we're seeing is what should be done anyway. It should be done by an organized, structured way of declaring bankruptcy for the entire world financial system and writing off the debt. The tragedy is that it's not being done in the right way, in an orderly way. It's being done by a implosion, a collapse, so that all of the people who should somehow be protected in this are exposed to losing everything that they have, at least on paper. So what do we do? Well, we've got to take over the system and bankrupt it in an orderly way. That's what the Obama administration should be doing. They should be looking at ways of writing off and restructuring trillions of dollars in debt that never should have been incurred in the first place. And as you say, it was incurred because all of the brakes were taken off the Wall Street debt factory, and they were allowed to just do whatever they wanted to. But it all goes back to the basic system and the way the system was set up in the first place to give the bankers control of the monetary system. There is a way to restructure this and to return to real producing values. And that's what the monetary reformers are trying to get the point across.
Sooner or later it's going to happen, Richard, because we literally have a corrupted, broken system that we keep. Each crisis seems to get a little worse than the preceding one, and now we really have the Godzilla of all financial crises. It could be before this thing ends, and we work our way through it as long as it may take, and it likely will take years and years to get through this thing. And then people will look back in hindsight and analyze it and write about it and talk about all of this shouldn't have happened. But the gross excess, the gross overcreation of debt, the greed that made it all possible, and the unbelievable human harm that it's causing, not just in this country, but all over the world, the countless tens of millions of people that are being harmed so grievously by what's going on, and then the people that caused this problem, the people who caused the problem, are being rewarded, and their victims are being punished and are getting so little in the way of help, despite the plans. The plans, when you come down to it, do very little for people. The supposed mortgage plans to help beleaguered homeowners. Probably most, are left out of this, and the plans really won't help. They'll just delay an eventual day of reckoning where people will continue to see their home values go down, prices keep falling. Who knows where the bottom is, but we're sure not there yet. So any plan would simply be to add the unpaid principal to the balance, maybe provide lower mortgage rates or whatever, but eventually a greater balance comes due on homes that aren't worth the residual balance of the mortgage. And if that were my mortgage, I'd simply walk away. I wouldn't pay it, and I'd let the bankers worry about it. So the foreclosures will continue. The homeowners will be in even greater trouble down the road. And the solutions proposed aren't solutions. They simply create a greater problem. You're right. I mean, we need to scrap this system and come up with an entirely new one. But it's not going to happen with Obama. We can see that.
Well, he's got 6 months, I would say, before he hits the wall. And this new budget is taking us there. So we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. Let's take another break. We'll have a final segment, Richard.
This is RVN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the last segment. It's been a very important hour, Richard. I hope I can get you back on a future program and we can continue to talk about what's going on. And I'll continue. We've had a lot of programs on the economy. I mentioned earlier that Ellen Brown will be on next week. The week after, Bill Engdahl will be back. We had a program earlier. Unfortunately, the archive was lost. And Bill will be back. We'll update what's going on. He's got a new book out. But take the last couple of minutes we have, Richard, and finish up with some final thoughts.
Well, my website is www.richardccook.com, and I've got my latest articles on there. The most recent one is, as I mentioned, is The Last Picture Show, because the federal budget, and I worked in budgeting for many years. I know what a budget looks like, and this one is unbelievable. It's attempting to reinflate the bubble economy through federal borrowing, and it's just staggering what the level of deficits and how long those deficits are going to continue. And then on top of it all, they're projecting that we're going to pull out of this recession by the end of fiscal year 2009, which is this September. That is what is in the official documents. And after that, we will have budget happiness for as long as the eye can see. It's just remarkable the level of self-delusion that we're seeing at the very top level. What they must do is to challenge the very basis of the banking system and the way that money is introduced into circulation. The federal government, the representative government of the people, must take over the creation of money in this economy. Money is not something that belongs to the banking system for them to continue to enrich themselves through compound interest running out forever, because that is what has destroyed the world economy. Money should belong to the people. It should be considered as a public utility. And we need to take it over again. It's been in the hands of the banking system, the financial elite, for almost a century now, since the Federal Reserve System was passed. Before that, we had attempts in this country to have a democratic currency that would allow the producing economy, the economy of working men and women, to function. We do not have that anymore. That has been taken away. It has been destroyed. And the federal government has been under the control of the people who have done that. All of that has to change if we're going to get out of what we are in now.
It's a cancer, Richard. It's a cancer that is just killing us. Either we change it, or it will continue to eat at us and destroy us. And it gets more virulent all the time. Oh, it's very sad. I'm in my mid-70s. I was born in the Great Depression, but too young to know what was going on. But in my lifetime, I never really thought I'd see a day that we would come to this, where we literally may be in the middle of something that's worse than back in the 1930s. And heaven only knows what things will look like when we get out of this and how many people will just be absolutely decimated by it. You're right. We need to scrap this bloody thing and change it completely. I hope you're right that we can, that Obama will hit the wall in 6 months and maybe some light will go on that everything they've tried hasn't worked. They have to try something different. Well, the market has given its reaction, Richard. Every time they have a plan and talk about it, the market goes down.
Right.
I mean, doesn't that say something?
Yes, it does.
Always. It does. The program is over. Our time is up. They'll break away very shortly. I am really grateful to you for coming on, and I hope we can do this again. You've got some awfully important comments to make, and there's nothing more important than what's going on in this right now. So, Richard, my great thanks to you, and let's do it again.
Okay.
And I encourage listeners, come on back tomorrow. My guest will be Dennis Halliday. And I'll tell you about Dennis tomorrow, but he is a very important activist, and he will be on the program. We'll discuss his past work and current thoughts. Join us again, then.